previously on Wisco Weekly.
If it's better for your wallet, if it's better for your health, if it's better for your productivity, it's better for you not to drive.
But the flip side of it is the independence of your mobility. And on this episode,
because you piss people off that way. Like when you start talking and you start throwing egg at people that own a car and saying bad things about people that enjoy having a car, you're not going to bring them to the table, which I think is one of the major problems that we have in this country, is this division that we have. That's not the way to attack the common enemy.
This is Wisco Weekly, an automotive business podcast sharing the voices of automakers, automotive retailers, and transportation professionals who are driving and shaping the future of automotive.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Chicken brown, chicken brown cow. Boom!
That was an appropriate explosion there, because on this particular episode, we're going to be discussing something that is not exactly a hot topic out there, but depending on how you view this particular issue, it can be a hot topic. And there can be lots of adversaries that are out there. So one of the things that has been permeating in this world that we're living in now is this idea of congestion pricing. And it's a very real thing now, especially with New York having implemented it. And there are certain undertones of what exactly congestion pricing is doing to the personal vehicle ecosystem. And it's only fitting that on the Wisco Weekly podcast, where we share the voices of automakers, automotive retailers, and transportation professionals who are driving and shaping the future of automotive, that we have Kelly Cruz and Rudy Solo in the house to discuss what this transformation of the car culture is turning into. So, Kelly, Rudy, how are you both?
Little, different feeling this evening. Well, the listeners wouldn't know, but different room, no red wine. I mean, it's just feeling like we're a little, off kilter tonight.
Yeah, Kelly's going to talk to you sober, so prepare to put your blindfolds on and just take a quick little nap, right?
No, you'll enjoy. Always enjoy.
Rudy, what's going on with you?
I think this will be a very interesting show tonight. We have, obviously, we prepared ourselves for it, but I don't think we overly prepared for it. I think this is going to be a nice, free-flowing discussion. And I must admit that I prompted it. I wanted to bring this topic up because it's kind of a part of a lot of what I've kind of brought to this show as to whether or not the personal vehicle and our infrastructure should be solely focused on the personal vehicle. But there's this other... Maybe wing. I mean, because some of the stuff that I'm seeing out there seems like it's like political, almost like a military wing. And that, Dennis and Kelly, is a very hot topic. I'm going to disagree with you. I think this is an extremely hot topic because with New York passing into law congestion pricing, which will actually go into effect by 2021. It's not there now. There's a lot of work that they need to do in order to implement congestion pricing, which basically means vehicles entering into Manhattan below 60th Street will pay a fee. They'll have cashless toll infrastructure. But this, a lot of people are saying that this is the first shot, like a literal shot, not just a warning shot, but an actual, weapon being shot at.
It's the impetus to something that's bigger and perhaps more destructive.
Which is what many people are calling the war on cars. And this is a whole movement out there that I'm watching. Some people would argue, you're a part of that because you're advocating for transit, you're advocating for transportation outside of the personal vehicle. And I would argue, yeah, maybe I am a part of the quote-unquote war on cars, but I don't I don't like to discuss things in such like black and white ways. I think there's a much more positive way for us to talk about the new transportation world that's out there. And rather than focusing on a war on the car, I think that this should be called, as Jeff Sabatini in Car and Drivers, Car and Driver magazine talked about this, I think this should be called a war on the status quo. Everybody is fed up with traffic. Everybody's fed up with the one way that we're all living and commuting. That's a better way to say it, because you're not going to anger as many people by saying, we're sick of the status quo. And guess what? The status quo, you might as well replace that word with, this should be called the war on traffic.
Well, the war on cars has been a term that has been thrown around for quite some time. And usually the connotations are associated with the environmental impact of cars. And so for one good reason or another, it never really picked up any steam, because in this car culture of the United States, it's like, well, sure, it's bad for the environment, but I still need to get to work.
That's right. And if you don't go to work, how are you going to pay your taxes? And in this life, the most important things that you have to do, especially as a United States citizen, is be born and then pay your taxes, right? Because, I mean, let's just be honest. Like, it's extremely important.
There's only two certainties in life, death and taxes.
And it's
right?
True. It's very, very true.
I have
true.
To use that phrase all too often in my line of work.
In your line of work, especially, even in my line of work as a muni bond lawyer, because we have, you know, the interest on muni bonds is tax exempt. I know you guys are already falling asleep, but the tax exempt status of the muni bond is a way to get around, you know, paying that tax on it. I'm not going to go down that road.
Maybe I should have brought that wine.
But I'm going to tell you, some people out there are actually saying this and asking the question, and they're backing it up with, I don't know, some evidence or some corroborative information. Here's an interesting question, and this is a question that we should talk about tonight. Mm. And it's a crazy question. Is the car the worst invention of all time?
Absolutely not.
That seems like too strong of a statement.
There are people out there saying that the car, because of the damage that is done to our environment and the way it's like divided the way we live, the way that we've no longer exercise the way that we are, no longer that we, it's destroyed communities, it's broken us apart. People are saying the car is the worst invention of all time.
And would you say the same thing about planes? I mean, not all the same aspects, but it's like, oh, rather than, no, you're traveling much further distance when you get on a plane. But it's like, oh, but if you're going within the same state, why not get in a car instead of a plane?
Well, here's the argument that I don't believe that the car is the worst invention that we've had. And that is the car, well, some would argue that one of the aspects the car represents is status. I do think that that particular fact is kind of minimizing. But, and you know, the other fact of what cars has done is it's allowed us as individuals to be able to travel freely wherever we want, whenever we want, with whomever we want. So it's kind of given us this sense of independence and arguably freedom as a result of it. Now, I think, you know, as we kind of now start to talk a little bit about congestion pricing and its role with the car culture, to me, I'm thinking about congestion pricing, and obviously it's easy to draw similarities to the gas tax, right? Congestion pricing is going to be another mechanism by which we can fund different infrastructure projects, different public transit projects. But one of the things that Samuel Johnson from the Toll Roads had shared on our episode, and I thought it was very insightful, and if anything, I'm kind of using his philosophy and applying his philosophy to congestion pricing, and that is, you know, back in the day, I'm sure the gas tax was probably brilliant, and it was probably needed, and it had to be done. But the one thing Samuel Johnson said was the gas tax bet against technology. And so I do wonder if congestion pricing is betting against something else, because will it be this 30-year, 40-year revenue stream that, again, it's like at some point can we easily just get rid of it? Because certainly it's going to be very, very hard to get rid of the gas tax. And if we move to these different models, it makes sense to get rid of the gas tax. But I hardly doubt that anyone from the, anyone from the federal side, from the state side would say, hey, you know what? No, let's keep the gas tax and let's add these sources of revenue to infrastructure and public transit projects.
Well, they are doing that. They are doing that right now. They are talking about other sources of revenue. They're not going to get rid of the gas tax. Here in California, one of the other primary ways for us to fund our infrastructure is through the sales tax. So a lot of the transit agencies, every single county basically has a transit agency. And we, every time you go buy something that's subject to the sales tax, either a quarter of that or a half cent goes towards transit or transportation projects. So there are supplements. It's just, it's not enough. Like look at our roads, look at all the train lines that need to be built, look at the other alternatives for transportation that people want. It's just not there yet. And so that's why, like, yes, if you put in congestion pricing, it'll be another revenue stream. But as we've argued, you need to give people another alternative to get to central places like downtown LA and other places other than the car. A place like New York City makes a lot of sense. Best transit in the entire country. There's many ways to get in and out of the city. Like, using a car in New York is a bad idea. I lived there for a number of years. We had a car for part of it. We mostly didn't use the car. My wife needed to use it because she was a surgical resident. She had to go to a number of hospitals. But we primarily didn't travel by car because we didn't need to. LA needs to make sure when it launches its congestion pricing that everything is built out. And if eventually a place like Orange County decides to do it, Seattle is thinking about doing it, Philadelphia is thinking about doing it, I'm sure San Francisco is thinking about doing it, the alternatives need to be there like they are in New York. So I was hoping LA would be first, but it makes sense to me that New York was the first because it's got the best transit options in the country.
Yeah, I agree with needing to make sure the alternatives are available. Rudy, in the article that you mentioned on Car and Driver, going back to you before about the before I referenced the Car and Driver article, you had mentioned the idea of everyone paying gas tax or sales tax, and I think we have the benefits of living here in California, or in your city or county, you pay certain taxes. But in the article, talking about the incentives or disincentives to drive are things like increasing the cost of parking or reducing parking spaces, where they're trying to get the people who are using the cars to pay more for the infrastructure. So if you're willing to drive a car, you don't want to use the alternatives, you're going to pay a higher rate for parking. What I found interesting about this, I hate traffic. I'm not a big fan of LA. You know this about me.
I do.
I felt like this article was really was the war on cars, the war on traffic, whatever we're calling it, really started years ago. And is that why I can never find parking in LA and why parking's already so expensive? So it's hard to imagine making it more difficult in a place like LA because it already does not seem accessible and affordable.
Let's talk about that. In fact, I thought the article did a wonderful job talking about parking. You guys may or may not be aware of this, but a lot of cities, including San Diego, just approved this last week, are now getting rid of minimum parking requirements as a part of new buildings.
I saw that.
And that is going to make, in my opinion, the existing parking an amazing commodity. Like the value of a parking space could, blow Bitcoin out of the water. Like, are parking lots? And parking lots are already great real estate investment to get mm-hmm. involved with. But as the minimum parking gets eliminated, think about the value of a parking space. And if it just gets too expensive, which is just going to happen, people are going to be like, well, I can't drive. I can't afford the park. I can't afford to pay $150 a day to park. So what are my alternatives? I need to ride share. I need to take a scooter. I need to take some kind of a people mover, whether that be a bus or whether that be some kind of a shuttle. I got to think about transit. I got to use services like VIA, which is, that ride share that's working with MTA. They spoke at the panel that we were on. Will it force people? I think the answer is yes. When you start hurting people's wallets, when you start taking away the subsidy, when you start making things not free, people will start, and affecting their wallets, they'll start changing their behaviors. They will. 100% they will.
Well, and that's also an incentive for the people who are moving into these buildings who already don't have a car or maybe are thinking about getting rid of their car to say, my rent is effectively less because I'm not forced to pay for parking or it's not part of my rent. So again, another incentive to people to maybe get rid of a car if they were already going to.
You hit the nail on the head. I think that is a big part of it. Like, and there are a lot of people that are, I mean, it's obvious. Every city in the entire world is getting more people moving into it. It's just whether or not, well, they bring in their quote-unquote luggage with them, which is their car, and the car is very expensive, and it's the parking space, it's the insurance, it's the gas, it's all that other type of stuff. Like, when people get rid of it, sure, they're getting rid of a portion of their freedom, but you know, there's plenty of ways to when I lived without a car for about a year, it was very easy to rent a car. This was before Uber. This was before Lyft. This was before Turo. This was before all those other options that are available now. It was so easy. If I needed to go get a car, I would just take the train to LAX and jump on the shuttle and go to the rental car places and get a car. And I believe, and I'm a big proponent of, you know, I told you, my favorite vacation is to jump in a car and drive on roads I've never been in. And California's got some of the most amazing roads that you can drive on and highways and see very scenic stuff. So, no, I do not think cars are the worst invention of all time. I wouldn't be able to see beautiful things like, you know, Mount Whitney over off the Highway 395 or the ancient Pine Cone Bristle Forest on the other side of the 395. I wouldn't be able to see these things if there wasn't a car to access those. But I can rent a car and take a road trip whenever I want it. I just don't need to commute every day by owning a car. So I'm hoping that will change the behavior.
I think it's undeniable that there is a war on traffic. Again, I think we've alluded to this before where it's like...
No one likes traffic.
No one likes...
You can't dispute that, right?
It doesn't matter if you're Republican, Democrat,
correct,
Libertarian, Independent, Green Party, Sarah Palin support. Doesn't matter.
It's the one thing.
That was its own category.
It has to be.
It's the one.
AOC supporters, its own category,
it's
too.
It's the one thing we can all agree on. I mean, it's actually a beautiful thing. Traffic is beautiful because it's so ugly.
Yes.
You might get a few people who enjoy its time in the car. I don't know. Maybe you don't like being at home or being at work, and being in the car is a little bit of
sociopaths.
Safe haven,
sociopaths yeah. Like traffic. Okay, so let's
or
not eliminate
they love
the sociopaths.
Podcasts. And they want more time to listen to it.
If you're a sociopath, and you're listening to the show and you like traffic, we're sorry to offend you. Please keep listening.
Yeah.
Well, so it's undeniable that the war on traffic, everybody is for fighting. But Rudy, do you think that there is a war on cars?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I do think there are.
Explain, please.
There are many movements out there. Look, there was about 2 weeks ago, there was a series of protests, some young people that banded together by hand and walked into Boston's Big Dig to try to get people to tear down the Big Dig. You know, the Big Dig is that tunnel bridge system underneath Boston that was a big mess that had a lot of infrastructure problems. I think that's the beginning. I think you're literally going to see a lot more people protesting to get more freeways torn down. And look, there are, if you do a little bit of research about freeway removals, there are some pretty beautiful stories out there of when cities have actually removed freeways, removed highways, and what has been replaced there. Like, you see more life, you see more activity. Like, a great example of that is one of our favorite cities, San Francisco. There used to be a freeway going over the Embarcadero. You know, right over there. But when the earthquake happened in 1989, they basically decided, let's tear down the freeway. And you go to that part of town, it's fantastic. It's one of the most beautiful parts of town now in San Francisco with all that revitalization. So, yeah, I mean, there is a war on cars. But I don't like that. I do think it should be changed to the war on the status quo. And the status quo includes all of our infrastructure being built for the personal vehicle. Okay, this goes back to everything that we've said ever since I've come onto the show. I am against the primary mode of transportation being solely focused on the personal vehicle. We need to focus more on pedestrians being safely to walk, biking, micromobility, people movers, shuttles. I'm for that war. I'm for the war on the status quo, and I always have been. But I'm not. I don't like saying the war on cars. I don't think that's beneficial. I think we, because you piss people off that way. Like when you start talking and you start throwing egg at people that own a car and saying bad things about people that enjoy having a car, you're not going to bring them to the table, which I think is one of the major problems that we have in this country is this division that we have. That's not the way to attack the common enemy. The common enemy that we all hate is traffic. Don't make sides like saying the war on cars and attacking people that own cars. That's unnecessary division. So I do think that the framing of the battle needs to be different.
But I feel like even the word war inherently has a negative connotation, and it's kind of like, is it really a war? I mean, I guess it's good that you have something to fight for, and like you said, if it's fighting against traffic, but I think with traffic comes all the things like angry people, but you know the emissions, into the environment. So it's like
greenhouse gas emissions. Yeah, that's the major problem.
That's what I was going for. Absolutely. I got the word emissions, but greenhouse gas. So all the negative things that come from having too many cars on the road. But I wonder if there's like some. Is it somewhat counterproductive to have a war against cars, and is it against the individual having a car? Because then, for me, my next step would be to go to ride sharing. Well, if you go to Uber and Lyft and less people have individual cars, do you end up with more people in the market in the ride sharing business? And now it's like the question I think, Dennis, you asked it at the Hyperloop event, but have you really decreased the amount of cars on the road? Maybe you have less people driving on a daily basis, but you end up with a bunch more cars out there serving a just a different purpose.
Well, I think one of the ways to battle greenhouse gas emissions and the problem that's having it, and look, California is one of the leading states. We had our own emission standards. And you know, when my father came here in the 1960s, he said LA was brown. You couldn't see anything that was out there. I'm gonna tell you, this is a true story. I grew up in North Orange County. Okay, I grew up on the border of Buena Park and Fullerton. One day in the 1990s, it was about 1994, I looked outside of our house and I was shocked. I thought like maybe I was under some kind of a weird like hallucinating drug. I saw mountains. I couldn't believe it. I turned to my mom and my dad and I said, "What are those?" They go, those are the mountains. I said, where did they come from? They go, "Well, they've always been there. It's just things are starting to get cleaner now because we passed all these emissions, you know, standards over the years, and it just took that long to clean stuff up." I'm very excited about the advent of the electric vehicle. I really am. I mean, I think that's going to clean things up in our environment a lot more. But that's a car too, you know. So it just depends upon how you frame the argument. Like, should be a war on, you know, cars that are overly damaging our environment and that are shooting out, you know, bad emissions, like super old cars with busted old engines. And in California, you get pulled over driving one of those cars. So I'm for clean cars. I'm for ride sharing. I'm for transit. I'm for transportation. I'm for micromobility. But I agree with you. Using the word war is automatically going to put people on the defensive. Whenever you say the word war, people get defensive. It's a natural human reaction. That's why I don't like framing it that way at all. So to your point, maybe it shouldn't be called the war on the status quo. I don't know. I think the conversation needs to be framed better, and that's what I think our job is right here on this show.
Well, I mean, if we scale out of California and scale out of the United States, you actually, you know, and I'm trying to keep an open mind towards this whole idea of the war on cars. I mean, if you were to look at cities in Europe, for instance, you could actually make an argument that there is a war on cars because there are cities such as Paris, such as Madrid, that they and even parts cities in Germany too. I think Stuttgart's one of them, in which Stuttgart has Porsche and BMW. They are banning diesel cars from entering the city center. So, you know, forget about the fact that you have a car, but if you have that diesel car now, that, and you know, when you are in Europe, that is the primary fuel that people use over there. If you have a diesel car, you cannot go into the city center anymore. There was another Madrid is barring non-residents from entering the city center. So, you know, and I mention these things outside of California, United States, because to go back to this idea of the war on cars, is there a war on cars? I I still don't think so, but you can certainly say that there are cities that are trying to do their very best to encourage a different culture that eliminates the car from being in that culture.
Yeah, and I think that's important. I do, and I don't. Maybe this is so obvious that I shouldn't even say this, but as we've seen, you know, there's been a high rate of obesity in this country and in other countries. There's a high rate of diabetes, type 2 diabetes, all these things that are caused by people not getting enough exercise. That is an argument in the column of, oh, the car is the worst invention of all time. If we were all walking, then we would all be better off and we'd be healthier. Maybe, but I also do know that cars help service people that are disabled. Cars help service people that have children that are not able to be mobile. Like, should there be a special place for cars for those that really need it? Yeah, maybe. You know, it goes back to the micro-mobility argument that we always talk about. I'm all for scooters. I'm all for bikes. And I'm all that. I'm all for those alternatives, but they don't service everybody. I think if you can use something other than a car, you should. You should. You should. You should. Which goes back to the exemptions. The exemptions that are going to be built into the congestion pricing for New York and other places, there should be exemptions for people that actually really need a car. Like, they live in a place that they don't have public transit, they have a disability, they have, you know, a young one, something along those lines. That's an important part of it. Like, cars do service people that need it. But you shouldn't have to only use a car if you have the ability to not use a car.
Such a tough argument, though, because I was going to say, you know, could you somehow implement, I don't know how this would ever be monitored, but if you're only going within X, you know, miles of your house, you have to walk or bike or scooter or whatever. But then, like, if I'm going down to get groceries, how am I going to put, like, I can't carry 4 bags of groceries up the hill from the grocery store. Maybe you get some type of transportation that has, you know, a cart on the back or something that can carry it. But It's kind of like you said, it goes back to creating the alternatives in these different scenarios for short distances, long distances.
And it all goes down to technology as well. I do think that with the advent of delivery services for groceries, you mean these gigantic.
I hate grocery shopping.
Oh, it's the worst. You know what I hate about grocery shopping? The amount of time I spend in there looking for one freaking thing. It drives me crazy. That's why I don't do it that often.
That's because you don't have a list.
Of course I have a list. I use Evernote, baby. Evernote is my life's blood. I would not be able to accomplish anything without Evernote. I have like 100 notebooks on here, and you're damn right I have a grocery checklist. It's hard to find stuff. That's not the point. I digress. I hate grocery shopping. I'd much prefer to have that stuff delivered.
I was going to digress all the way to how much I love Trader Joe's versus grocery stores that have like 40 aisles.
Amen.
Like,
I was, yeah, I was going to digress to basically how my wife runs the grocery, you know, business in our household. And like, it's very much programmatic. Like, it's the same thing every week. So there's no need to like
That'd be perfect for
trying
delivery.
To search for.
That would be perfect for delivery. If you guys are literally buying the same thing every week, why not just have it on a subscription service?
That would be great.
So why don't you do that?
Because I'm not lazy.
I see. Okay, because that's not laziness. You see that? See, now that's an interesting.
Well,
efficiency.
I am walking.
No, that's right.
I parked. I walked. I carried. Although maybe I pushed a cart, but you know, I had to lift up a 5-pound bag of groceries into the car.
I hear you. It's a very good example about the groceries. But what does that happen? Once every week? Once every 2 weeks? You know, usually if you have a grocery store. If you're living in the burbs like you are here in Orange County, like this would never going to be subject to congestion pricing. You don't need to buy your groceries in downtown LA.
Well, so let's get back to this idea of the war on cars here, because so from a guest that we're going to hear from probably next week, Jonathan English, he brings up a really good point in how he depicts transit and successful transit, and he puts that in context of history of what is going on in the United States. And one of the things that attracts me to his argument is, and the reason why there is not a war on cars. So if I'm going to argue against the war on cars, so even if you date back to the 1920s. And when more housing development was being constructed, you started to see more development around suburbs. And as suburbs grew, and specifically now if you get to kind of the 1950s, 1960s, these suburbs, there was no practical methodology for transit solutions for these suburbs. And that's where you did have an explosion of cars, whereas in these suburbs. So therefore, the idea of a war on cars, well, I think that war on cars is very isolated geographically to these downtown areas, yeah, to these city centers.
Agreed.
But certainly, as you talk about some of these suburbs, again, because there's not a viable transit solution for them, a car is the only thing that they have to get around.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. This war on cars is a little overblown. It's clearly to get, you know, some media attention people love drama. People mm-hmm. love conflict. The reality is, it really is, should be the war on cars in these downtown / economic centers. Like, you know, a bunch of people are going to be going to downtown LA. You know, a bunch of people going to certain parts of Newport Beach. You know, a bunch of people are going to be going to Santa Ana. You know, a bunch of people are going to be going maybe around here, at least at Vallejo, where there's a lot of corporations and a lot of people going during the exact same time during the day. You can figure out a way to not have cars service all those people. It's not that hard, you know. And I'm not just advocating for transit only. Okay, the problem with transit is you got to lay track. You gotta redo the existing infrastructure. I'm all for redoing the existing infrastructure. Costs a lot of money, takes a lot of time. I'm for that. I'm advocating for that. But in the meantime, you can use other services. People don't like a bus? Fine. Use something like a trackless people mover, where it's like more of a tram trolley type of thing, where it's more of a pleasant, like, I don't know, amusement park atmospheric ride, where you're riding with a bunch of people and you feel better. There's something pejorative about a bus, but people just got to think a little bit differently about the vehicles that were being used. You don't have to use a super fast vehicle. If you know you're going to be going from one place to another where a lot of people live and the employment's right there, have a solution. And it does not necessarily need to be a track with a car. It can be something as simple as an electric shuttle, an electric people mover, you know, and get people on it. And then once you get the ridership built up, then maybe perhaps you can lay a track. You know, you can build that audience over time. I mean, there are companies out there that have these solutions and are ready to deploy them once people start thinking differently about commuting from a short distance from their home to where they work. I don't know. This is what makes me really passionate about working with some of these companies. Somebody that I want on this show works for a company. It's currently called Trams International. And they, you know, I've been helping them out and talking to them. And they build these people movers. And they want to get into the space of electric, pure, you know, high capacity, somewhat slow moving vehicles to go from point A to point B, just to get people out of their cars. That's very important, in my opinion.
And you're talking about driver with drivers or driverless?
You know, it could be with drivers in the beginning and then mm-hmm. perhaps driverless in the future once the proper infrastructure is built out and once the regulations are there and right. everybody feels comfortable with it. A lot of people don't feel comfortable with that yet. And a lot of my research right now, people are not for that, but that could be made over in a switch pretty quickly once people get comfortable with it.
Well, so war on cars, Kelly, for or against?
I'm about what it stands for, but like I said, I don't like I'm with Rudy. I don't like the war against cars because I think it's bigger or something different than cars. I don't like the word war, so I'll say I'm against it. And if it's really this idea of war on cars is then generating negative behaviors as a result, not for it. Let's fight for something else that, you know, we can kind of all agree on that creates more unity.
Which is traffic.
Right.
Now, again, to say war on traffic, you probably like the word war on that one better, huh?
Better. And again, even if you focus on environment, maybe everyone doesn't care about the environment as much as kind of one of their top priorities. But I would think if you said to someone, would you prefer a cleaner environment? Who's going to say no?
Right.
So
sociopaths.
Yeah.
The sociopaths that are in our audience right now would say no.
Or diehard podcast listeners who just want to consume as many podcasts as possible, and they do that in their car.
But you know, I don't want to push out any of our listeners. If you're a sociopath and you like the show, keep listening to it. Just, you know, just care a little bit more about society is all that we care about.
Well, the idea of the war on cars and evolving the terminology so that it's more, there's more honesty and accuracy and perhaps just, I guess, intellectual honesty about what we're really trying to say. I do think that saying a war on traffic is more appropriate because, as we had stated before, regardless of what kind of affiliation you affiliate to, doesn't really matter. You don't like traffic. You don't like moving at 2 miles an hour. And when you're, you know, going to, in my case, the other day when I went to Staples Center and just the exit itself, getting into downtown LA, that took 45 minutes to travel 2 miles. That was not fun. And I would gladly participate at anything to get rid of that. Yeah. Now, hold on. I guess let me just add one more thing to that.
Please.
Now, so then the logical conclusion or the logical next step would be congestion pricing. And I'm still torn on congestion pricing. I think, again, having referenced Samuel Johnson and asking a question, does congestion pricing bet against technology? I don't know if I have an answer to that just yet. I think one of the things that I would like to see, I would be for, there was a TEDx talk by the name of Jonas Eliasson, or Jonas Eliasson. He's a Norwegian guy, but he was specifically pointing out the case study from Stockholm, Sweden, where they introduced congestion pricing in 2006, and they introduced it as a trial so that in 2007, they actually removed congestion pricing. And it's funny, if you see this TEDx talk, he has these before and after pictures such that, whatever, I think it was like on June 30th, the last day of congestion pricing. And then on July 1st, when they removed congestion pricing, you can see how there was not a lot of cars on the 30th, and then all of a sudden, a ton of cars on the 1st. So in 2007, when they removed congestion pricing, everyone went back to their normal habits. And then in 2008, they applied congestion pricing, and again, it did decongest the roads. I think that would actually be an experiment in congestion pricing I would be for in Los Angeles.
Yeah, just going back as to what, you know, phrasing I would prefer, I go back to what Jeff Sabatini said. I like, yes, war is a pejorative word and it gets people on the defensive, but I like the war on the status quo, because the status quo means a lot. It's kind of a bigger umbrella. Status quo meaning vehicle infrastructure. It shouldn't just be for the personal vehicle. The way that we commute, that's a part of the status quo. Just having cars. I'm a big believer in, rather than the war on the status quo, let's just call it, let's change our status quo. Our status quo in current transportation policy, in current transportation infrastructure, financing, and use. That needs to change. I think everybody agrees with that.
I was going to go to a point you mentioned a minute ago.
About congestion pricing?
Yes. Was it, about the study and the kind of change from one day to the next. And It's just telling about the fact that everyone didn't run out and buy cars overnight. They still had the cars. They were using them more efficiently in the way they were supposed to for that period of time. And as soon as the floodgates opened up, all the cars came back in. So we're not telling people to get rid of cars, but again, I like this idea that if you have your car and you're overusing it, then you're going to pay for it more than other people. And I would be okay with that, or at least testing it out and see what happens.
Especially since you're using the roads more. I mean, it makes sense, you know, it's right. Pay your fair share. That's what we talk about a lot on here.
Yeah, I think one last bit of it. I think as we talk more about how there are these, you know, ginormous parking structures that go unused, and we talk about how 80% of the usage of your car is parked, or, you know, it's in a parked condition, parked state, well, it does then allude to the fact that, you know, this very expensive depreciating asset we never really get the most use out of because it's always going to be just non-used.
So is it the worst invention of all time? To be continued.
Dun, dun, dun. Well, listeners, the other, you know, I'm going to throw out this little challenge or contest. If you can come up with a great name for this new war on cars, war on traffic, we'll create a hashtag. We'll provide some monetary compensation reward.
No. We'll give them a, I got something for them. I got a selfie stick and a bike phone handle that we will send to them. I will personally
bike phone handle.
Yeah. So this way, or a scooter, you can actually, you know, people have their scooters these days. You can put it on there. You can have it's a phone handle for your e-bike, your bike or your scooter, and a selfie stick. That's what we'll give to them.
So if go ahead and send your name, your new name that we will support you with from now till the November 2020 elections. Send it to Twitter, send it to Facebook, send it to our website, or you could even send it to Rudy's Twitter. Again, we'll put all of our contact information on the episode page. We will have an Instagram account here shortly, so you could find us, Wisco Weekly, on Instagram as well. Send us a name that we can help you promote so as to decongest traffic.
Something kumbaya-ish is what Dennis is saying. He wants something that brings everybody together.
No, that's not actually not what I'm saying.
A little
at
bit
all.
Of kumbaya. Should we go out singing kumbaya tonight?
I'll let you say it.
No, you do it. You sign us off the way you always do.
On behalf of Rudy, Kelly, and myself, cheers. Prost, l'chaim, kipis, nastravi, salut, kampai, mabruk, tutsins, gambe, yamas, to the customer experience.